get out of this hellish furnace. I'm activating the manipulators, I said, touching the stud on the control panel that powered up the remote grippers and the outside flood lamps. Then all the lights went out. The control panel blacked out completely, and the steady background hum of electrical equipment died away. I damn near wet myself. For a breathless moment, I was completely in the dark, except for the angry glow of Venus's red-hot rocks just on the other side of my observation port. I could hear my pulse thudding in my ears. And then a really scary noise. A thump. Light but definite. As if someone had dropped a cable across the top of the ship. Before I could say anything, the auxiliary power came up. The control panel glowed faintly. The pumps gurgled somewhere in the back of the ship. Fans whined to life again. "Power's out," I said, surprised at how steady my voice sounded. Fuchs sounded worried. "Must be an overload from the manipulator motors." "And the floodlights," I added. "Shut them down and try to restart the main batteries." I did that, and sure enough, the ship powered itself up nicely. I blew out a breath of relief. Then I realized that if I couldn't use the manipulators, there was no point being down here by the wreckage. A very powerful urge to light off the thrusters and get up and away almost overcame me. I actually had both boots on the thruster pedal before I realized it. But I stopped and fought back the itch to flee. "Think, damn it, think," I raged at myself. "There's got to be a way to fix this." "We're scanning your telemetry," Fuchs said, his voice sounding edgy in my earphones. "Looks like the servo motors in the manipulators are drawing almost twice as much power as they were designed to do. Might be from the heat." "Listen," I said, my mind racing. "What if I put the manipulators and lamps on the backup power system? The auxiliaries can power the arms and lights while the main batteries run everything else." After a moment's hesitation, Fuchs replied, "Then you'd be without backup power if the main power goes out again." "It's a risk," I admitted, "but we've got to do something. There's no sense being down here without the manipulators working."
"You could get stuck down there," Marguerite chimed in.
"I want to try it," I said. "Tell me how to reset the manipulators." "You're sure you want to do this?"
"Yes.
Now stop wasting time and tell me how to get the manipulators on the auxiliary system and the lamps."
It seemed to take hours, but actually within less than 10 minutes I had the manipulators powered up from the backup electrical system, while the rest of the ship ran as normal on the main batteries. The floodlights seemed dimmer than they had been in the VR simulation, but still bright enough to light the area that the arms would be working in.
"All right," I said at last. "I'm going to poke into the gondola now."
"Okay," said Fuchs.
That's when I found out that my hands wouldn't fit into the Waldos while I had my gloves on. I could have screamed. I wanted to pound the control panel with my fists. They had fit all right in the virtual reality simulator, but here aboard the real Hecate, the cursed be-to-hell-and-back Waldo fittings were too tight for me to get my hands into them while I was wearing the heat suit's gloves. It was the servo motors on the gloves' backs I saw. The spiny exoskeletons that powered the gloves and boosted my fingers' natural strength jutted out from the backs of the gloves about 2 centimeters or so, just enough to prevent me from sliding my hands into the Waldos that controlled the manipulator arms and grippers. The clock was ticking. I was running out of alloy ballast to keep the ship bearably cool, running out of time.
"What's going on down there?" Fuchs demanded. "What's the holdup?"
"Wait a second," I mumbled. No sense telling him what the problem was. Neither he nor anyone aboard Lucifer could do a cursed thing about it. I hesitated only a moment longer, then started to pull off the gloves. The air inside the cockpit was at Earth normal pressure. There was no danger of decompression. It was hellishly hot, though. And if Hecate's hull got punctured, I'd be dead meat without my suit fully sealed up. So be it. I yanked both gloves off and stuck my hands into the Waldos.
"Ow!"
I yelled involuntarily. The metal was hot.
"What's the matter?"
Fuchs and Marguerite asked simultaneously. "Bumped my hand," I lied. The metal of the Waldos was hot all right, but I could stand it. At least it would take a while before the skin of my hands started to blister. It was like pushing my fingers into boiling water. But I gritted my teeth and began to work the manipulators. The arms reacted sluggishly, not at all the way they did in the simulator.
but I got them extended and gripped the torn edge of the gondola in their metal pincers.
I'm opening up the gondola, looking inside, I reported. Get the camera lined up with the manipulators, Fuchs snapped.
I pulled my left hand out of its Waldo and blew on it, then worked the camera control, slaving it to the manipulators. Wishing I had the time to rip the servo motors off my gloves, knowing I didn't, I stuck my hand back into the Waldo. It was like having your face wrapped in a steaming hot towel, except that the Waldo didn't cool off. If anything, it was getting hotter. The remote arms peeled back the thin metal of the gondola. Actually, the metal broke away, snapping like brittle panes of glass. Inside, I saw two spacesuits still hanging limply in their open lockers. The helmets were on the deck, though, rather than the shelves above the suits. The inner airlock hatch was ajar. Another suit was draped over the bench in front of the lockers, a pair of boots sitting precisely where a person's feet would be while he or she began putting on the suit. But there were no human remains to be seen, nothing but a whitish powder sprinkled here and there. And a strange pencil-thin wire or cable of some sort running up and over the broken side of the hull and down along the center of the deck. It disappeared into the darkness beyond the pool of light from Hecate's flood lamps. That's when I heard it, a dull, low growling noise like the rumble of distant thunder, but longer, more insistent, growing louder and stronger until I could see the ground shaking beneath Hecate's skids. Earthquake? It couldn't be. It was Hecate itself that was shaking, rattling, skidding across the oven-hot rocks with a brittle piece of phosphorus's hull clamped in its manipulator pincers. I could see the wreckage skittering away from me as I banged around inside Hecate's cockpit, rolling and sloshing on my belly while the ship skidded across the ground as if some giant hand were shoving it along.
"Full power!" I heard Fuchs yelling, whether to me or his own crew I couldn't tell. "Maintain trim!"
Then, with a smashing impact that nearly tore my insides apart, Hecate hit something and tilted dangerously up one skid, and everything went black. Tidal wave. I must have been unconscious for only a few moments. My head had slammed against the inside of my helmet when Hecate banged against whatever it was that stopped our skidding across the landscape. That low-pitched thundering was still shaking the ship, but except for a throbbing pain in my head, there seemed to be no major damage. The panel was lit. No indications of hull puncture. I almost laughed to myself. If the hull had been punctured, I wouldn't be alive to read the panel, not with my gloves off.
"The volcanic eruption," Marguerite's voice was saying in my earphones, her voice tight with fear. "It's blown us away from your position."
"I got pushed around, too," I said, surprised at how calm my voice sounded.
"Are you all right?"
"I think so." I was scanning the control panel. No red lights, although several were in the amber. I raised my head to look through the forward port. Phosphorus's wreckage was several hundred meters away now.
"What the hell happened?" I snarled.
"That volcano eruption," she explained. "The glow we saw off on the horizon."
"You mean it's pouring out lava?"
Marguerite's voice was a little softer now, less tense, but only a little.
"It's too far away to threaten you, Van. That's no worry."
No worry for them, I thought, up in the air.
"But the explosion sent a pressure wave through the atmosphere," she went on, "like an underwater tidal wave. It blew Lucifer almost upside down and pushed us at least a dozen kilometers away from you. The captain's struggling to get the ship trimmed again and back into position above you."
"I've been pushed along the ground like a dead leaf in a gale-force wind," I said. Fuchs's voice came on.
"We're heading back toward you, but it's taking all the power the engines can give to push against this pressure wave. Get set to lift as soon as I give the command."
"I have to get the escape pod."
"If you can," he said. "When I give the order to lift, you pull out of there, whether you have the pod or not."
"Yes, sir," I said.
But to myself I added, "As soon as I have the pod in my grip." Marguerite's voice returned.
"He's got his hands full piloting the ship. It's like riding against a hurricane up here."
I nodded, checking over the control panel again. Everything seemed all right. But was it?
"This is the first time any human has witnessed a volcanic eruption on Venus," Marguerite said. She sounded pleased.